You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, it's August and we have seen the return of Islanders hockey in its all of its glory in the 2-1 win over the Panthers in game one. The Islanders took a lead in the 5-game series and they did their thing. That was Islanders hockey, and we had missed it, but there it was right in front of us, sweaty moments and all towards the end, but it works, and they still found it. They still have their groove.
Yeah, it's funny that it's still taking getting used to. I don't think I'll ever get used to it. The national media's talking about, wow, that looked like the Islanders, that looked like Islanders hockey. And they even talked about it, people were talking about it during their exhibition game against the Rangers. Like, that was Islander hockey, they got a lead and they killed off the game. And that stuff still just doesn't feel right to hear people talk about the Islanders that way. But that's who they are. And it was, the Panthers looked bored, I thought. Like, I was like, this must be we watched the rest of the games and like a lot of them are of helter skelter. There's like 800 power plays. There's fights everywhere. I mean, it must have been, the Panthers must have been like, why couldn't we play that kind of game? There were two penalty shots in the Penguins Canadians game. Why couldn't we have that? Instead we had to go watch the Islanders just suffocate a game from us. So, but it must have, Barry Trotz must be really chuffed because that was, if he could draw up a game like his, if when he puts his head on the pillow and dreams about his ideal hockey game, that might have been it.
Yeah, right. That sounds about right. If you've been watching, and we'll talk about more about the games later on, but if you've been watching and you see Brian Boucher do his, commentary, he seems to be like the number one guy who keeps bringing up over and over again. Well, they haven't played a game in 4 months. There's going to be a lot of rust. Well, they're shaking off the rust. It's been 4 months. There does not look like any rust on the Islanders. The Panthers did get a couple of chances, but yeah, they found their groove right away. The Panthers, I guess bored is a good way to put it. They were definitely frustrated. And, we don't need to talk a lot about the exhibition game against the Rangers that preceded that, which is another 2-1 win. But very much like in that game, the big guys you expect to come out and, guns blazing, just never materialized. Artemi Panarin had a very, very quiet night against the Islanders in that exhibition game. And Alexander Barkov was very quiet against the Islanders in game one. He just didn't seem like he was even there almost. And it wasn't like the Islanders just stuck some one person on it. It was, the fourth line got some shifts against him. The Nelson line got some shifts against him. The Pageau line got some shifts against him. Even Lee and Barzal. So it's like it was by committee that they just kept those guys off the board. And, we talked about the Panthers aren't a bad team, but, they are top heavy and they do have Huberdeau and Dadonov and Barkov at the top. And Huberdeau did get that goal early in the third period. But, one of the features of Islanders hockey that I always forget about is how when they're playing their style, yes, it can be boring, but it also makes the clock go very, very quickly. And so in the third, the Islanders had a 2-goal lead. JG Pageau got things started in the first period. Anthony Beauvillier in the second period with a power play goal. The Panthers did push a little bit in the second half of that second period, but the Islanders got out of it without giving anything up. So then they start the third period. Huberto scores, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Now it's going to fall apart. But a thing about Islanders hockey that we all forget is that it runs the clock down so quickly that the game is pretty much over before you know it. So, I mean, he scores like 30 seconds into the period. And so there's 18 and a half or whatever, 19 and a half minutes left. But then all of a sudden, 19 and a half minutes becomes 15 minutes. Then 15 minutes becomes 10 minutes. Then 10 minutes becomes 4 minutes. And then 4 minutes becomes 2 minutes. And then the game is over. And you're like, oh, that's it. It's over. They won. So that was the thing that I remembered that I had completely forgotten about. But yeah, it was, they clogged up the middle. They wouldn't let people out of their sight. And they came away with what they needed to, which was a game one win, which, as we've seen, as you've probably heard a million times, the team that wins the first game of a 5-game series goes on to win 85% of the time. So it's kind of a big deal, but they did it and they had to.
Yeah. I like that. The forgotten feature of Islanders hockey. I'll never forget that Penguins game. It was game four when they swept the Penguins, which still sounds weird to say. I was at a bar watching. I remember we tried to go to the Offside Tavern, but they had a flood or something, and they were like, you know, this other bar nearby is going to show, and so everybody was going to go to the Offside Tavern. When I think it was called Off the Wagon. I don't know. It was one of those like dime a dozen bars and down in the West Village, and it was nice. I mean, it was a great time, and I remember when the Islanders were up. What was it? 1-0 at that time. 2-0. Just that third period, when that third period started, I was like, or they were up 2-1. I was like, this period is going to feel like years. It's going to take years off my life. It's just going to crawl. But just like you said, like that period just, it didn't fly by because, you know, you're obviously so nervous the whole time, but you look up at the clock, you're like, wow, that was 3.5 minutes in between whistles. That was 2 minutes in between whistles. It's just because the Islanders are so efficient when they're going well at making sure that you know, that if they're not just icing the puck, their exits and entries are good. If the other team's trying to transition the puck into the defensive zone, the Islanders will beat them back a couple times. That takes off, you know, a couple shifts, which are like 45 seconds each. And that's basically what was happening. Like the Panthers would come at them. The Islanders would beat them back, and then they would have to restart 200 feet away, or the Islanders would maybe get a counter attack out of it. And it was to a T what the Islanders wanted to do, needed to do. And this is looking way too far ahead, but it just makes you confident, not just in this kind of tournament, but beyond that, because, you know, the Islanders, that was their first win in meaningful games. They had lost, you know, 7 in a row before the hiatus, and they started to look better in some of those losses. But before that, you know, they weren't playing well, and you wonder, like, oh man, I started to miss that, you know, this quote unquote boring style of hockey. And to have it back, it makes me feel like, oh, you know what? Like, I shouldn't be worried. You know, what we were thinking was the whole time we were hoping the case was that the reason the Islanders started to struggle was because Cizikas and Pelech, you know, even a guy like Cal Clutterbuck when he was there, like the Islanders were missing pieces, and they need all those pieces to succeed. And that this is just another kind of step towards that being the case, is that the Islanders can pull this game off against anybody. They just need to they need depth. They need the right guys in the right places, and they're all here right now. So they're a formidable foe, no matter who they play. And if, you know, like I said, it's looking too far ahead, but it makes me more confident going next year because, yes, they're going to need to do a little salary cap gymnastics. But as long as they have enough guys in the right spots playing the right role, like the Islanders should hopefully be able to pull this kind of hockey off for the foreseeable future, because even though some of these guys are older, like, you know, in their prime or past their prime slightly, they're still good at what they're supposed to do. And as long as the Islanders have this kind of roster set up and you know, that beautiful bald man behind the bench, I think I feel better about it. And I mean, I'm getting carried away by one game in August, but I was really pumped after that game, not just for this tournament, but I'm like, all right, it was just great to see that back, because it makes me a little bit more confident in this whole regime going forward too.
Yeah. It's hard not to be excited, because like you said, I mean, this is their game. They did it. And yeah, I mean, I guess the one the one big weakness to playing that style is they need to have their full complement of players in order to pull it off, because I guess they haven't really built that kind of depth where they can just plug in the next guy. Like, that's the next level, really. I mean, isn't it? Like, we always get irritated when the Penguins call some guy up from Wilkes-Barre and he turns out he plays just like everybody else. Like, that's the, you know, that's what makes those teams really annoying. And the Islanders haven't reached that level yet where they can just lose a guy and plug him in and you get the same results. And having Adam Pellick in particular, when you said that beautiful bald man, I thought that's who you're talking about too, but no offense.
He's the beautiful balding man. As a follically challenged man myself, I actually never really went into the stage that he's in right now. As soon as my dad was the first person to point out that I was losing my hair, I was, you know, just really young. I was like 22. And he's just like, you're going bald. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to cut it all off. So I just cut it at that. I just, you know, did the full bick at that moment. Mm. That basically that night and never looked back. So I never went through what Pellick's going through. But I've seen other people, you know, obviously go through it, and I give him a lot of credit. Like, you're hold on to that. And, he kind of pulls it off. He looks good. He looks like his look right now is kind of the way he plays. It's just like, he's, you know, it might not be the most beautiful, but he pulls it off really well.
Well, you pull your look off too, I got to tell you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. But yeah, I was saying that he needs to grow the rest of it out so he gets like the Ally of Frady Scullett. Remember that? He had like,
oh, yeah.
He was like bald up top, but he was like real. Party was definitely going on in the rear up there, but there was no business up front because there wasn't a whole lot up there. But anyway, that's my goal for Adipel. He obviously can't do that as an Islander. But yeah, no, seriously, having him back is a huge deal. And it just makes all of the other pieces, particularly on defense, fall into the right spots. And I thought he and Ryan Pulick had great games. I thought Devon Taves was phenomenal in that game. He ended up, he had a goal in the Rangers game, but I thought he was really, really good. And then the other thing too is that, they had lost Casey Cizikas for a long time, and they had lost Cal Clutterbuck and Martin. Those three guys, obviously together, we know what they're capable of. But then it was about kind of finding the other spots for everybody else in the lineup. And when people are hurt and then you trade for a JG Pageau, like, there was a lot of experimenting going on that didn't really kind of, you know, get finalized. And so I think they seem to have found those lines. Brock Nelson was arguably the best player on the Islanders the entire game. He was fantastic. He was all over the place, and he was on a line with Beauvillier and Josh Bailey, and it worked really, really well. Pageau was on a line with his buddy from Ottawa, Derek Brassard, and Tom Kunackle, who was in for Ross Johnson. And again, those guys were pretty effective. I mean, they didn't, you know, Pageau had the goal, and they were pretty noticeable, especially on defense. Like, they just didn't let the Panthers kind of get away with too much. And that leaves the top line of Barzal, Lee, and Eberle. Now, Barzal and Eberle have had chemistry before. You know, that line had its shifts, like where they were out there working. They seemed to just kind of just be missing goals for a bunch of times. And, you know, with Lee, he hadn't had the best of seasons. They just weren't falling for him this year like they have been normally. I mean, he lives off the rebound. He lives off the garbage goal. And this year he wasn't getting them. So if he can start getting them and that line can start finding some success, you know, this, it's hard not to be excited when you see them doing their thing, because that's what they were doing, and it was really cool. There is,
hard unfortunately, not to be excited by boring hockey.
Yeah, that's the Islander way. There's a T-shirt. The
Islander way.
I whenever I see people, you know, tweeting about how boring it is, I always want to respond with like, that's a feature, not a bug. That is how you know the thing is working properly, when it looks like that. If it wasn't looking like that, they'd be in a lot of trouble. But there is a sour note, however, though, in terms of the lineup. Johnny Boychuk took a hit up high from Panthers defenseman Mike Matheson, kind of put a shoulder into him. To me, it looked like he caught Johnny kind of in the upper chest area, and then his head obviously was impacted by it. I don't know if his head necessarily got hit. It was looked pretty bad. Johnny left the game. That was his second hit in the first. He only played 5 minutes, and he got really leveled twice. Poor guy. And then he left the game and didn't come back. So they ended up doing all that with five players, and there was no update on Boychuk's status as of right now. You know, I wouldn't be surprised not to see him play in game two on Tuesday, because he looked pretty rocked. And, you know, Johnny's had a history of that kind of stuff. So if he's out, obviously it's not great, but the Islanders do have a lot of depth and they can slot in there. I would think that Andy Green would probably be the obvious choice there. Maybe he plays with Letty. One of them switches, I think one of them might have to switch to their offside, but we'll have to see. Maybe Noah Dobson and Green both get in and end up playing as a pair, with Letty as kind of an extra. I don't know how the lineup section works, but it is going to be a choice for Barry Trotz. But again, this is where the Islanders have depth on defense. I mean, they got Green, they have Dobson, they can slide those guys in to make up for Boychuk. But, you know, so far after one game, it could not have been better. Like, this was exactly the outcome you wanted. They played their game, they won, they took control of the series right off the bat, and now game two is on Tuesday at noon. So if you're home, working, find yourself a TV or a tablet or a computer or something and queue it up at noon. And then game three is on Wednesday. And so that's where the goalie situation might get kind of weird. Simi Varlamov was phenomenal in the game. Would he play back-to-backs? I don't know. Put Thomas Greiss in a potential third game? I don't know. We'll have to see. But it's going to be a different choice. I think it'll depend on how game two goes, but that's another choice for another time, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to come fast and furious because, like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're probably listening to this Monday, and you know, in 72 hours or whatever, the Islanders could be on their way to you know, the playoffs proper, or they could be down 2-1 and or up 2-1, who knows? But either way, it's just it was as like you said, as good as the Islanders could have drawn it up, and they also, I think, you know, knock on wood, probably weathered the best game Bobrovsky. I mean, he's shown flashes of being brilliant, obviously, in his career, but this season was largely a struggle for him, and he played really well. He was probably Florida's best player, I thought, and the Islanders probably could have been up, won this game by 2 or 3 goals, and they ran into a good goalie. So the fact that they were able to beat the Panthers when Bobrovsky was on is another encouraging sign. And I mean, just generally, like, the Panthers did not seem to have an answer. That's why I say they looked bored. They just didn't seem to have an answer for what the Islanders are kind of giving them, and which is weird because the Islanders were, like, you know, if Liam McHugh knows who the New York Islanders, like, what their style is, Joe Quenneville and the Panthers scouting department does too, and it's just they were befuddled by it. And we've talked about this in the past with this, when the Islanders are going, like, teams just can't, they're such a hard team to beat, they make life so hard for their opposition that you'll see really good players just look confused. I remember Phil Kessel just being like given up in that Penguin series, and even if Evgeny Malkin and just players, like, really good players, are just like they just kind of throw their hands up in the air, like, we're not going to score tonight, or we're not going to be able to score enough tonight to beat this team. And Varlamov, his form looks really good. He was really good against the Rangers, and he had a choice quote, very Nabokovian quote, with when he said that, talked about a pad stack save, that old school doesn't get old, and I love that. I love that quote. And I think the fact that the Islanders now have, you know, the Boychuk, it's unfortunate, but like you said, the depth is there. You know, I would love to see both Andy Green and Noah Dobson come in. I think that pair would work perfectly. Not only is, you know, is it like a good, you know, Andy Green, obviously, you can, yes, this is cliche, but he is a pro defenseman. He's a pro's pro. He does whatever it takes, and having Dobson play with that kind of calming presence is only going to help him. I think that those two would be a great pair going forward, you know, even next year, if the Islanders are able to convince Green to stay on a, you know, cheap 1-year deal. But because the only issue I had with the game was Boychuk and Letty's play, even before Boychuk got hurt, like, sometimes you get good Boychuk and Letty, sometimes you get bad Boychuk and Letty. And it looked like they were kind of on their way to a bad Boychuk and Letty game. It's nitpicking, but that was the only kind of thing that concerned me a little bit. Obviously outside the injury, now that there's a, you know, roster decision to make, but that was it. I thought everything else kind of worked out well. I was really happy to see JG Pageau score again. That guy's awesome.
Happy to see him get a win with Pageau. Yeah. That was the first one.
Yeah, it's true.
It came at a hell of a time.
I got to say, like, if I'm really close to pulling the trigger on a Pageau jersey. I love him. I don't stop thinking about that guy.
He said this team is like a brotherhood, which is something that, if you're a longtime follower of the team, is something that Evgeny Nabokov mentioned too when he was here. He's like, this team is like brothers, and you know, that team had a lot of different guys on it that aren't here right now. And the Brotherhood, I guess, aesthetic and or ethos has remained. And it's kind of cool to see outsiders come in. I mean, I'm sure when he was with Ottawa, Pageau did not think about the Islanders once, or at least maybe probably only two or three times a year when they would play them. And now that he's been involved and is one of them, he can kind of see why these guys are so tight. And it's cool that he's immediately joined that group as well. I don't know what the deal with Letty and Boychuk. I mean, with Boychuk, I guess it might be age, but yeah, I mean, his play has deteriorated a little bit. And with Letty, I don't know. I think he's just having, I know we're coming up on year two now, but I just don't think he's fit this Trotzian system. And it's still the same thing. I didn't miss that either. We're like watching Nick Letty play and being like, kind of expecting more. Like he's the point guy in the power play, and you think, yeah, that's great. But it's just, you know, it's like when, you know, people used to complain why Michael Grabner didn't play on the power play. And I think Jack Capuano said a couple times, because he's not good on the power play. It's like, yeah, okay. I mean, his skill set didn't lend itself to that kind of area. And Nick Letty's skill set could, and it should. And he's got so many different skills that he should be an asset in every area, but sometimes he just looks a little bit confused out there, whereas the other four guys are all clearly pulling on the same rope. So the same way.
It's also weird because I think at this point it's pretty safe to say Devon Taves is a better player than Nick Letty, especially like mm-hmm. you know, in current form. And they have similar strengths. Like they're both great skaters, they're both great puck right. movers. But for some reason Devon Taves is fitting in perfectly in this system and Nick Letty isn't. So you wonder, you know, maybe is it just a Boychuk Letty partnership doesn't work in the system? And but I mean, I don't know. I think Nick Letty's probably the guy that I think is most likely to be moved on this defense going forward. Who knows? Maybe not. We don't know anything, obviously, but it just would make sense. And it's just possible. Sad because he should be. He was so good.
Yeah.
In that in his first, you know. What, 2-3 years with the team, especially that first him and Boychuk were that was one of the best, you know, right. not even being hyperbolic, they were one of the best defense pairings in the league, right. And it's just kind of gone to shit, like it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, never forget. I mean, I know this is like a lifetime ago, but never forget that Garth Snow acquired both of those guys in an hour for nobody on the roster, and yeah, they were one of the best defensive pairings in the league that year. Like, that's just an insane thing to have happened. And happened to the Islanders. Like, it's just crazy. But, yeah, ever since, it's been a little bit – it just hasn't worked out. And, you know, I'm not saying Letty's bad or anything. Like, he had his moments, but it's just – it always feels like there's something missing there. But we'll see what happens in Game 2. I expect Joel Quenneville to have his Panthers charged up. I expect Barry Trotz to tell the Islanders, you guys haven't won anything yet. Like, you got to do it again. And they're going to be charged up. I don't know what changes the Panthers might make. It seemed like they kind of had everybody all hands on deck. But yeah, you brought up a good point, and Arthur Staple brought up this point too in The Athletic, was that Bobrovsky was good. Like, he made a couple of saves there, and you know, Brendan and Butch were playing that sort of game of like, oh, if the Panthers come back and tie this, remember these saves. Well, guess what? Those were still great saves, but the Panthers never ended up tying the game. But he was great. And you know, if the Islanders can still get two on him and make it stick, well, then that's just what they're going to have to go ahead and do. And, you know, if the Panthers looked bored, well, that's going to be a problem for them because they're probably going to get the same thing. They did turn it on. Again, for the first half of the game, the Islanders controlled the first half of that game, like right up until the midway point in the second period. Once they scored their second goal, the Panthers started to kind of turn it on a little bit. And things got a little bit dicey there in the end of the second period and then the very beginning of the third period when they did score. But from that point on, the Islanders locked them down, and I don't remember a single real serious scoring chance after that. And then the Islanders, the best thing they did was they just didn't take too many penalties. I think somebody, maybe there was like maybe one minor or something like that in the entire game, and that was it, which is the best way to keep the Panthers' power play in check is to just not give them any opportunities. But even when they did, they, you know, the power play kind of came and went, and it was over. So it was cool to see, and again, it was Islander hockey, and it felt good. And, you know, I joked before the game on Twitter that the best thing about the Islanders-Panthers game was that the Oilers were playing at the same time and nobody was going to be watching it. Well, the Oilers got their doors blown off by the Blackhawks because Dave Tippett decided to play Mike Smith for some reason. I have no idea why. And I don't know if any of most people were probably watching that. I don't think anybody really watched the Islanders, but if they had, they would have been like, oh yeah, well, I've seen this before. This is exactly what I expect from these guys. So it was kind of cool to see. And yeah, we'll see what happens in game two.
Yeah. The scheduling was funny. The first thing I noticed when that schedule dropped was that of course the NHL would put the Islanders on at the same, it's just, you know, they would be the staggered game, which I thought was funny, which makes sense. But yeah, game two, man, it's game two on August 4th or whatever it is going to be. And another thing too, I was saying before that just about how it still is taking some time to just get used to and get the juices flowing. I wouldn't say that my enthusiasm level was at, you know, normal playoff levels yet, but it's, and we said this last week, it definitely is for the teams that I hate. And I mean, watching the Penguins lose and the Rangers lose, I was there. I was like, this is exactly how I feel when they're playing, when the Penguins and Rangers are playing playoff games. And right now the Leafs are playing the Blue Jackets and I feel the same way. So I'm sure my Islanders enthusiasm will catch up to it, but right now, so it's right now it's getting there. Like I'm starting to really get into to playoff mode, and it's been fun hate watching.
Yeah, it's been a cool time to watch. Again, it's a nice distraction from everything else that's going on. It's just to watch these games, and I've not noticed the lack of fans or anything like that. It's been a lot of fun. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we're gonna talk other scores and games from around the league, and we're also gonna talk about a significant piece of Islanders news that the both of us completely biffed on last week and didn't talk about at all. What was it? Find out after the break. Thanks. Our favorite sponsor, as always, is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic defunct hockey logos. There is a clearance sale going on right now. You can check out some cool stuff that's a little bit discounted. Cincinnati Stingers are on there if you're a WHA fan. There's some really cool stuff to be found in there. They also have our Lighthouse Hockey Al Arbor t-shirts, and our portion always goes to the Center for Dementia Research. If you use the code LIGHTHOUSE15, you can save 15% off your order. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Visit today, visit often. It's a great site, and you could save yourself some money and get some cool stuff. VintageIceHockey.com. Okay, what was that big piece of Islanders news last week that we both completely forgot about because it happened a week ahead of when we sat down and talked? It was that the Islanders arena at Belmont Park will have a name. It will be UBS Arena, UBS being the big Swiss, right? Swiss banking thing, like, right? They're Swiss, I think. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, they're Swiss with a... Like most corporations with a pretty evil history.
Yeah. You don't want to look too deeply into that. There might be some stuff in there that we don't really like. As Dom said, as we all expected him to say, the arena will be ingloriously sponsored, unlike the gloriously unsponsored Nassau Coliseum. Those days are obviously over. Barclays is all another banking conglomerate. It is a significant piece of news. It's not a happy piece of news. It's not exciting. Nobody gets excited. The, you know, something, what is it, like 380 some odd million that UBS is paying the Islanders for the naming rights is not going to end up in my pocket, your pocket, anybody listening to this pocket, but it is a significant piece of news in that the Islanders they've partnered with the Islanders specifically for this arena for like 20 something years. And the rights, you know, they want to make this team their kind of stronghold and on the island and, you know, in this arena function. And it's kind of cool. Like, it's a kind of a cool thing. It came out of nowhere. Nobody really expected it. It's a pretty boring name, to be honest with you, UBS Arena, but people are going to start calling it the bank. Quite frankly, it's kind of lame. We could call Barclays the bank too. Nobody does. It's the bark. It is kind of a cool thing. And it's fun to be able to say when they move into UBS Arena in 2021. So I don't know. I was just sitting on Twitter and all of a sudden this started happening. Jim Baumbach, I think, was the first to have it come out. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. And then all of a sudden my whole day was UBS stuff. This bank I never even thought of outside of, you know, this big building you see in New York City every once in a while when you walk past it.
Yeah. It's so funny that they're going to a literal barn and now they want to be called the the arena called the Bank after, you know, being called the Barn, but for forever. So that's funny. But the the thing that stuck out to me was like immediately was, well, where did this come from? Like, but usually, first of all, the Islanders are masters of the usually they kind of just put the stuff out. This is an old NHL practice too. Is Friday afternoon at like 5:30 p.m.
The dump, usually news dump.
Yeah, the news dump. And I don't think this was a part of one. So I was like, I was like, wait, what? That's what this is supposed to come out Friday? But yeah, the whole thing just seemed, it seemed just so foreign to an Islander fan that someone would pay up, you know, those, that kind of scratch for, to be a part of the Islanders. And usually when people talk about banks and the Islanders, it's someone frauding checks or, you know, the Islanders being bankrupt, and now they're backed by the Bank, and it's so they've come a long way. I don't think I'm going to call it the Bank. I think I'm mostly, you know, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to call it Belmont. I like, you know, I love Belmont, the track, and just saying, like, you know, spending a day at Belmont is great. And I don't really think I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to the Bank. That's very, first of all, it's very confusing for a lot of people, because, you know, when a lot of times I got to go to the Bank to run an errand and stuff, but there's just, they didn't, the fact that they didn't waste any time like to get the trademarks was pretty funny to me too. It's just like, we know Islander fans. I don't think that they thought Islander fans would love the idea of it, but they just knew that Isles Twitter, there'd be someone out there who would just be like, all right, let's start calling it the Bank. And then the Islanders would have to scramble for the legal, the legal backing to make sure that they can make money off of it. But
they had those Belmont hats with like the logo, the Islanders logo as the O. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was even before they had even secured the location. They had those hats with like the Belmont, like the typeface, the Belmont Park typeface, right, with the Islanders logos. So, I mean, somebody is in charge of this stuff and they're pretty on top of it. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that they would do that.
I'm just excited more than anything to see, you know, the what do you call it, when renderings, is that what they're called? Mm. They look good. I mean, it's pretty, the Islander fans are lucky with Barclays, because we saw exactly how not to build and, you know, an NHL arena, and like what it should feel, smell and sound like. So they just basically need to say, look, just do the exact opposite of this building and we should, the fans will love it. But everything, it's strangely, scary that everything so far that's part of Belmont it's seemingly going on off without a hitch, which makes me very nervous. Like, I just, I'm super nervous. Even the Bank thing, I thought that people would just, you know, it'd be universally panned, but it wasn't, people weren't like, oh, this is great, like a cool, snazzy nickname for a cool arena. But it wasn't like, you know, a lot of, if this was like 6 years ago with the Islanders, I think people would just lampoon it. And it wasn't really lampooned either. There were like people that were just like, kind of how your reaction was, like, eh, it's kind of lame, but it doesn't like piss me off. Which,
as somebody said it on Twitter, it's not Little Caesars Arena. Like, that's okay. You know? So that's the good news. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like completely bonkers, like, what? Really? Or the, where the Seattle Kraken are going to play, which is like climate. What the hell is it?
Climate Pledge.
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to say climate contract. No, Climate Pledge Arena. And it's like, I think Amazon is really like behind it, which, you know, if they just called it Amazon Arena, again, people wouldn't have paid any attention. Like, oh, okay, it's Amazon. But like Climate Pledge Arena is like, really? That's where you're going? Okay, fine, sure, I guess. But so it's almost like an Islanders game in and of itself. Like, it's just so boring that people just kind of forget about it, and then it's over and it's done and we want something else. I did see though that there was at least one tweet that had a typo to make it IBS Arena, which is like irritable bowel syndrome, but obviously that's a typo, so it's really making more fun of that than anything else. But yeah, so you know what's funny too is that again, we totally forgot about this last week because we were talking about the Kraken and all that was a Friday news dump or the giant big thing. And obviously we were talking about the games. The thing that reminded me that we hadn't talked about it was the fact that ours, I think, is the only Islanders podcast that did not have John Ledecky and Oakview Group CEO Tim Leiwicki as guests last week. So, guys, we apologize. We're so sorry that we didn't talk about it, and I guess our invitations got lost in the mail, but that's okay. We'll forgive you this time. But if you have a moment, and you know, Monday, again, there's no Islanders game, so you should they were on every other podcast, and I highly recommend it because they all have different, yeah, there's a lot of talking points in there, but they're all a little bit different. So like Arthur Staples at The Athletic, No Sleep Till Belmont. Yeah, it was a little bit shorter than the other ones, and they got their sort of talking points out. But you know, whenever John Ledecky talks about something, he's so excited and he's so into it and he's so committed that you can't help but get excited for it too. Like that's his great gift, is getting people to be excited for this stuff. And like you're kind of like, yeah, man, I'm ready. Let's do this. And Leiwicki had a lot of cool stuff to say. Over on Andrew Gross's podcast, it's quite a bit longer. It's about an hour long. And again, the guys had more or less the same talking points. But then Gross talked to Jim Baumbach, who has been, you know, along with Randy Marshall, following this Islanders arena saga forever. And, you know, he had some cool stuff to add, too, about how it's funny that Leiwicki was one of the guys who had helped the Islanders arrange a preseason game in Kansas City during the Charles Wong era. And I think Leiwicki was the guy behind that arena in Kansas City. So here is this, you know, guy who went from almost taking this team away 20 years ago to helping them build an arena to stay on Long Island 20 years later. So it's kind of funny. And then just this morning, I was listening to Bloomberg has a sports business podcast where it was just Leiwicki this time. And it was a lot different. They didn't really talk about the Islanders all that much, mostly about the building itself. But some of the innovations that are coming to this building are going to be pretty wild. Like, you know, the 5G is a whole big thing, but it's not just that. It's Leiwicki's plan is basically that you would not talk to another person in order to like get food or, you know, buy merch or whatever. Like, it's almost like these Amazon, I don't know if you've ever been to these in the city, like an Amazon Go store where you just log into Amazon on your phone or something, you walk to the door, you take whatever you want and you walk out and you'll get scanned and it will just pop up on your app. It'll basically scan your phone without you even knowing, you're just walking and that's how you pay for stuff. And I think that's kind of what the plan is for the building. How that goes over with a fairly old school Islanders fan base? Well, we're about to find out, I guess. But you can't fault them for trying. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff that there's planned for this. And, you know, hopefully it all works when they open up in 2021, because I'm excited to see it. I mean, I know it sounds kind of lame to be excited, but I mean, this is a long time coming for us. And so I agree with you. It all seems a little bit too perfect right now. And you know, as Islanders fans, we know that almost never works out. But I'm going to enjoy it for what it is right now until hopefully the other shoe drops. Hopefully the other shoe doesn't drop, but we'll find out.
The along with Adam Henrique and Alec Martinez, Randy Marshall and Jim Baumbach should both get, you know, days at the Coliseum. And, you know, when the Anaheim or the Arizona Coyotes come to Belmont, it should be like the Randy Marshall game, and all the players should wear Marshall on the back of their jerseys. And sure, then we can do one for Baumbach too, just because we talk about it a lot, but the nuance that they and calming presence that they give the arena coverage, because you know, every hockey media content farm out there, whenever the, like a weird thing would happen with the Islanders arena issue, like they would just, you know, they wouldn't read the whole thing. They would just say, oh, like more arena trouble, Islanders are, oh, get ready, Hamilton to Ontario. The Islanders are coming.
Yeah.
But Jim Baumbach and Randy Marshall were just so they got it. They got the right information out all the time. If you just basically just read their stuff, you would be significantly calmer about the arena situation, basically at every turn. I wouldn't be opposed to Randy Marshall Day at the bank.
I'm sure she'll love to hear that because they deserve it. I mean, it's not a beat that anybody asked for, but you get stuck doing it. You know,
it's also it's like a strange, like if they went to like a newspaper convention and met a colleague from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and they're like, "Oh, what beat do you write? And what's the most interesting thing you do?" And they would say, "Well, probably the New York Islanders arena saga." Like, it doesn't sound great, but there are some crazy turns in this thing. And, it's definitely, on the surface is probably a boring beat. But when you dig into it, there's some weird shenanigans going on.
I mean, how many beats, it's not even really a beat, cause obviously they write about other stuff, but like how many stories go on for that long? Like, you know, I mean, some people write an expose or a story, like, you know, the John Spano one is an example. Like, you know, John Valenti was, I think, the big guy at, who kind of covered a lot of that stuff. And Alan Hahn, too, when they were at Newsday. And, you know, it was a story. It ran for, I don't know, a year and a half or so. And then, you know, there were kind of updates here and there. But after that, it was over. And then they moved on to other stuff. Valenti, I think, is in the crime beat now. And obviously Hahn moved on to Nick's stuff. But, like, you know, this Islanders arena story has been going on for 20 years. Like, that's incredible that you keep writing stories about the same subject for that long. It's unbelievable that it became a beat. Like, how many kind of random stories like that become essentially a beat where you are the person who they go to for information on this, and you create sources and you get these, you know, scoops and things like that. It's just, it's insane. And yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a very unique situation. And if Randy and Jim wanted to write a book about this, I would be the first person in line to buy it, because I want to read about it. And there's probably a lot of stuff that they didn't include in some of those stories that I would like to hear as well, because it'd be pretty cool. But yeah, so UBS Arena coming in 2021. Get your checkbooks ready, because, or your credit cards ready, because it's going to be expensive. But and check out check out all those podcasts I mentioned, the Staple and Gross. But the Bloomberg one is really interesting, too. It gets a little bit boring, but it is kind of cool. Again, they asked some different questions. Like, they're not really talking about ice surface or anything like that. They're talking about, some business aspects of it. But it is kind of a cool way to listen. All right. So moving around the league a little bit, some games just to catch you up. Again, it's Sunday night right now. The Leafs and Blue Jackets are playing right now. The Blues and Avalanche, I think, is probably just over, right? The Blues are up 1-0 in that game. There's a Minnesota-Vancouver is the last one of the weekend, because let's face it, people care about that about as much as they care about Islanders Panthers. That's the Western Conference version of Islanders Panthers is Canucks and Wild. But already Saturday night was pretty crazy. The Penguins are down 1-0 to the Canadiens. Jeff Petrie in overtime. I watched that game. You could talk about the Rangers game in a second, because I obviously did not watch that. But I'm watching the Penguins game, and I came up with an observation, and it's a bit of a hot take, but I'm going to say it. And I'm watching Evgeny Malkin play, and he's still a great player. He's still got all the skills, but I have come to the conclusion that, in the words of Mike Lang, the great Pittsburgh broadcaster, Elvis has left the building. I think this guy is just done with this team. He's done with Pittsburgh. He wants it. He looks like a man who wants a change of scenery very, very, very badly. And I think that we joke about this all the time. You know, Bruce Garriott had him traded to the Kings, whatever, 15 years ago. I think we're actually pretty close to Malkin getting traded probably to the Kings. Like, so somebody, or the Sharks or Ducks or somebody out there. Jim Rutherford's not going to trade him anywhere within their division. But I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, I don't know, man. He just feels like he's checked out. It feels like he wants to move on, and he's tired of playing second fiddle to Sid and these guys. And yeah, all right, fine. He's got two cups, but like enough, or three cups, but it's just enough for it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm obviously not, you know, getting Malkin's head, but I'd also like to see him play with Travis Hamonic on the same team. I think that'd be kind of a fun thing. Two mortal enemies on the same side. So, you know, maybe they'll end up as Winnipeg Jets together. That'd be kind of cool.
I wonder a lot about the Hamonic Malkin thing, because, like, obviously we remember it, and I'm sure Travis knows that he's had some really bone crunching hits against Malkin, and they've gone at it, but you know, they've obviously not. And, I haven't checked out any Calgary Flames Penguins games since Hamonic has moved to Calgary, so I wouldn't know. But I just wonder if Malkin, you know, when they're on the ice, if he says, yeah, number 24 in Calgary, like, I hate that guy, and he hates me, so just someone have my back. And, you know, Jake Gensel's like, what? Wait, why do you hate Travis Hamonic, and why does he hate you? It's kind of like Mikhail Sergachev and Brian Boyle, who fought in the,
yeah, right,
the preseason game.
All about?
Yeah. And all of a sudden, NBC had this highlight package of the two of them from back when Boyle played for the Devils. Like, they went at it. So, first of all, how did NBC know this? And second of all,
right,
they kudos to these two for keeping this blood feud going on into the preseason of a crazy tournament thing. But yeah, I mean, the I would say this. I would be wholesalely shocked if Evgeny Malkin is a one jersey player. He's just never struck me as that guy. And it's not just because, you know, the whole enigmatic Russian kind of cliche. It's just, like you said, like he's one of the best players in the world. He's been one of the best players in the world for what has it been now? You know, almost 15 years he's been in the league, maybe more than that now. Yeah, more than that. And he's always been the second fiddle on his team. So naturally, he would, I'm sure, want to see himself get the credit he's due. We said last week with Thomas Grice, like I could just picture him in a Devils jersey. I could just picture Evgeny Malkin in a Dallas Stars, like that green Dallas Stars jersey for some reason. I wouldn't say it's likely that he's going to be traded in the offseason, but I just don't think he's going to be a Penguin for, he's going to do the whole, maybe like the Patrick Marleau thing or whatever, and just, go chase a ring somewhere else or try to be the man somewhere else. And I wouldn't, I would definitely be thrilled if he did do that, because he's been terrorizing the island. That's the other thing. Like Sidney Crosby, obviously we know he's scored, he's basically a Hall of Famer just in his games against the Islanders. And that's kind of overshadowed, I'm sure, the damage that Malkin has done too. So, if that happens, I'd be thrilled. that Penguins game was just bananas.
Like you said, two penalty shots.
Carey Price was awesome.
Carey Price was phenomenal. Matt Murray looked a little bit shaky. The Penguins just came at the Canadians in waves, just waves. But then every once in a while, the Habs would get a break and just something stupid would happen. Like the puck would just squirt off somebody's stick. The ice, not for nothing. Like the ice in Toronto has not been good. Like, I don't know, I'm not usually one to complain about it, but for all the complaints that people make about Barclays Center, it's absolutely terrible ice. To make no mistake, that ice is absolutely terrible. The ice in Toronto apparently hasn't been good. And they said on one of the broadcasts that part of what makes the ice so hard to maintain, especially in the summertime, is like you've got people there. So the body heat and the doors opening all the time, can make it a problem. I think it was actually Brendan and Butch were talking about this. And so that could be a problem. Well, you don't have that problem here. And so the ice is actually probably in better condition in August than it would be in a normal state if there was actual people in the building. So it is something, but you could tell last night that ice was pretty bad. I mean, Brian Rust who had the penalty shot for the Penguins? He just missed wide. And then Jonathan Drouin, the puck just squirted off his stick before it even got anywhere near a chance to take a shot. So it was something. And then Jeff Petrie just right down Main Street just hammered home an overtime goal. And I just tweeted, I don't know what the Oilers were thinking about getting rid of this guy, because every time I see him play, he's just phenomenal. And my Habs fans, friends love this guy. So I think the Oilers could use somebody like that. And again, they got pumped 6-4 by the Blackhawks, who were supposed to be roadkill. They were supposed to be no match for the great Oilers. I got to give the Oilers credit too, because like, throughout the entire pause, their media has been carrying on like it's really nothing, talking about trade options for them and how great a season they were going to have and how they couldn't wait to get back on the ice because Tippett was on charge and they had a real chance at the playoffs and a real chance to make some noise. And then they start Mike Smith in game one, and it was 4-0 Blackhawks halfway through the game. And it was like, what is happening right now? And it wasn't all his fault, but boy, he was not good. The one goal was definitely his fault, because it like bounced off of, he slid out of position and somebody bounced it off of his back or something like that. So now they're down one game to nothing, and they're gonna have to figure out a way to get back into it. And I don't think the Blackhawks are gonna go away that quietly as people kind of expected. So that was an interesting one as well, and a little bit of crow eat, a little bit of crash down to earth, I think, for some Oilers people that like, this won't be quite as easy as we thought it was gonna be. So that's always fun.
One of my friends pointed out that the Habs were very close to trading Petrie. He was talked about at the deadline a lot, and they held on to him. And they basically were like, well, we're not out of this thing yet. And I guess they were right. They held on to him for this playoff.
This reason.
Yeah, exactly. And, right. But I think I'm going to say this, like, it's been great. Just having hockey back, I'm really enjoying it much more than I even expected to. I knew I was going to, but it's been really well done, I think. And there's usually leagues in the NHL, especially, like they get stuff wrong, and a lot of it's nitpicky or whatever. But they've done a really good job. The games are staggered well. They've been called well. It's really just nice to have. It's like hate watching teams, like. Look, I don't think Pierre Maguire brings anything particularly notable to a broadcast. I definitely don't want to hear Mike Milbury on the color commentary of a game, of course. But like, even having that ire towards those two human beings is nice. Like, it's weirdly soothing to be like, to be mad at Mike Milbury as he's talking over whoever's calling the game with him. And Pierre, listening to Pierre talk about, you know, the golf, he was talking about a burger place in like Fargo or something. Whitey's
Burger. Whitey's up there in North Fork, North Dakota.
Yeah, he's like, of course he's got to cross the Red River to get to the college he went to, which is North Dakota, one of the great programs. And let me tell you about Whitey's Burgers. Like, oh, it was just great. It was great to hear that, because it was Pierre is who he is, but just having his voice like playing is nice, and not being a 2012 Stanley Cup game that I'm rewatching on NHL Network for the 10th time during the hiatus. It's just, it's nice to hear them, to hear fresh material from Pierre. And I think the most poignant moment for me Saturday, I was just kind of walking through my house, just like packing stuff. And I just heard, you know, I think it was Kenny Albert in the background. It was Eddie O. And I was just like, wow, it's really nice to have that ambient hockey noise on in the background again. And the games were good too. I mean, I really enjoyed watching the Rangers lose. Like I said, like, I really felt the same watching those, our rivals. And it was nice. It couldn't have started any better, because I was a little nervous that the Rangers, you know, would, you know, be up 3-0 at the end of the first, and I would just turn it off, and that would ruin my mood for the rest of the day, and I wouldn't watch anymore. But just watching those guys scramble around in their defensive zone for the first minute of that game against the Hurricanes was so nice. It was just great. And then obviously Slavin scores real quick too. So it got off to such a good start with the Rangers being a terrible defense, because, hell, I'm scared to death about them going forward. After, you know, just they're going to get better. They have got really good players, and I'm really, really afraid of them. But it was nice. I was like, all right, I'm really gonna enjoy watching Mark Stahl, you know, turn into a pylon again. And this is, it's nice. It couldn't have gotten off to a better start. And the Penguins game, and even the Jets Flames game, which obviously the Matthew Tkachuk thing was weird, but like that felt like a playoff game. So it just, from noon to 1 a.m. or whenever that game ended, it was really great.
Yeah. That Jets Flames game was tough. And I turned it on just at the moment that Mark Scheifele left, and I was like, oh boy, some Jet is hurt. And then the camera went behind his back, and my jaw just dropped and was like,
yeah, it was terrible timing, because it happened just as the Canadiens game went to overtime. So everyone who was watching that game then flipped over to watch Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, I'm not going to say it was a nasty hit, but like, I don't know, you know, who knows, his reputation is what it is. But that's exactly what happened to me. I flipped over to that game. I'm like, oof, man.
Yeah. Just the one guy. I mean, the Jets, you know, their forward crop is excellent. Their defense is very bad. But, you know, the one guy they really couldn't afford to lose is Scheifele. And, boy, that's going to be a rough one for them. But you never know. Well, Connor Hellebuyck was phenomenal in that game, too, and he's been good. He's a finalist. So we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, that was just one of those, like, you know, it really puts you back into the groove. And I got to say, like, they have done a pretty good job of it. And, you know, I haven't noticed the crowds or anything like that. Pierre, like you said, hating on Pierre. He's got a new look now. He's got new glasses, got some beard stubble. I think he looks like Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods fame. It's, you know, it's weird seeing him there and hating him being there, but at the same time feeling comforted that he's there and that you hate him being there. And it was funny that you mentioned on Twitter that, it, you know, him not being there and him being outside, like John Cusack and Say Anything with the boombox over his head playing In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel. That would have been an even funnier thing if he wasn't there, and we could have been making fun of him trying to get into the building. But I'm still going to picture him doing that because it's too funny, which is why.
I wonder if he was allowed in, or if he's just like, I'm going to live in Roger's place for 2 months.
He's in that little glass booth, and I guess Boucher's in the other glass booth over in Toronto.
I'm just never going to leave now, because they're not going to be able to find me. They're not going to kick me out. So
yeah, The glass booth is too much. It's like a phone booth. Like, it's this huge glass thing. It's like, it reminds me of there's a Golden Girls episode called Grab That Dough where they go on a game show and there's a big tube that they put Bea Arthur in and there's like money going up and you have to like, she has to grab it with her hands. And that's what it looked like, Grab That Dough, the Grab That Dough booth. But anyway, so yeah, it's been pretty good.
I really wonder about, I mean, I think that booth, like the third person, rarely, the Islanders are kind of blessed because AJ and Jennifer actually do a great job in that really weird kind of third role, which I think is either, it either can add a lot to a broadcast or can just be distracting.
Pierre,
exactly. Like, but Pierre in particular, he's been in there for so long and you know that he has to know, right? His self-awareness, and I've run into him in weird spots before where I'm like, wow, he actually doesn't have any self-awareness. But I really want to know if he actually thinks like, not only am I adding to the broadcast, because you know what? He probably does. He seems like a competent lad. But when he does the, they're not doing them now, obviously, but the coach interviews, like when he's interviewing John Cooper and the Lightning are in game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And he's like, hey, you know, you're down 2-0. What do you need to change? And John Cooper probably just wants to strangle him. I really wonder if he has the self-awareness to know that John Cooper obviously is not having a good time during this interview. When Pierre hangs up his mic and his Penguin Stanley Cup ring for being a scout that he loves to flash on the broadcast, when he hangs that stuff up, I would love, you know, an hour special on just like him. Just Pierre, tell us, you know, what are you? You don't hear about him. You don't hear about him anywhere else. Like, he's not on Twitter. This guy, like, what is going on with him?
Yeah. What does he think his job is? Yeah. I will say this in Pierre's defense, the whole like coach interview thing just bugs me to no end. Like, I feel bad for hockey people when they do it. Pierre, obviously, number one. Boucher is another one. But I feel even worse for football people when they do it, because those coaches don't want to talk to these people. And so if it's like Michelle Tafoya or somebody else, you know, or Pam Oliver. Yeah, thank you. Yep. She's been doing it. I mean, they've been doing this for 100 years, and you give them all the credit in the world, because that's got to be the toughest spot, because these coaches just aren't, they just know. You got to talk to Bill Belichick when the Patriots are down 10 points, the Bills in a game, you know, they're going to win. He can't tell you they're going to win, but it's like, this guy wants to literally be anywhere else but talking to you. And I just feel bad that they have to do it, and God bless them. They do it. I don't know how, but they do it. And so they ask the same inane questions, and the guy, sometimes the coaches just leave. Whereas the hockey coaches weren't going to do that. They're just going to talk. They're going to humor Pierre, unfortunately. And we're going to get absolutely nothing out of it, but it is what it is. Also did a good job, Matt Dumba, in his speech before the Oilers Blackhawks game. Hopefully raises awareness to you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and racism movement that the NHL is, you know, taking part in. They don't do really great, but that speech was great. So hopefully we can focus on that and move the conversation along as it should. So Tuesday, Wednesday, games 2 and 3, both at noon. You know, hopefully the Islanders can take care of business and get it over with and move on to the next round as quickly as possible. But I think the Panthers are going to want to come out and really, take back at least a piece of this series. And again, if Bobrovsky can play to his strengths again, they might be in trouble, but you know, it might end up being 3-2-1 games. And that's about all the Islanders need to move on to the next round. So,
yeah, I really feel confident, which I mean, even watching game one, the whole time, I just felt like, the Islanders are going to win this game from the second that the puck dropped. I was like, this game, the Islanders are going to win. Just some days you have that feeling, and it's like weirdly confident going forward that this could be a quick series, but I'm hoping for the best, preparing for the worst as usual with the Islanders. And it's just nice to see those guys back up. It's just like, yeah, the Islanders have such a, I can't remember who, Sarah tweeted that we take Sidney Crosby for granted, which is just, the guy gets called the best player in the world 8 times at broadcast, so I don't think anyone's taking it for granted. But I think we take the Islanders jerseys for granted, and it was just so nice. Like, that look is so beautiful, I think. And just seeing those jerseys fly around the ice is really, really nice. So that it's just, it was these weird creature comforts that the Islanders, even like seeing Barry Trotz just kind of waddle around behind the bench, like just seeing Lane Lambert whisper in his ear, like there's a spy and he's got the nuclear codes and he doesn't want them to see him, see what he's saying. There's just like, there's just so many great things that the Islanders bring to not just me, but obviously everyone, like the little things that we all love about watching a hockey game. And
seeing Trotz confused by the call to give Matheson a minor rather than a major. And then he was like, what? And then the guy talked to him and he was just like, all right.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, we're back. Like, that's the way to, we're back.
We're back, that's, baby.
Yep, pretty much. So we're back. Hopefully everybody's having a good time out there and enjoy it for, again, the distraction and the Islanders are back. This is they played their game and they just got to do it a bunch more times and keep on going. You can all follow Mike on Twitter. Can you tell everybody your Twitter handle again?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski. He could also help you with some betting tips and betting advice via the Action Network. You can follow me at Culture of Losing. If I was at the flea market today, I found a cool Islanders pennant from 1980-something. I'm going to have it framed and hung up. It's kind of cool. It was a buck. It was nice, yeah. You can follow Lighthouse Hockey at LH Hockey. You can follow us, our podcast at LHH Podcast. You should check out Advanced Shouting with Dan and Noel. You should check out PT Isles from last week. Hopefully we'll hear more from those guys this week. And I hate to put you on the spot like this, but what about Wednesday night? Are you free? Like, you think you'd be able to do something after game three?
I think so.
All right. We'll see if we can make it happen. We'll do
two
whole podcasts in the same week. Imagine that. Yeah,
we're making up for lost time. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had 4 months off, right? Or at least 3 months off. So, yeah, we'll try and come back. That's the nice thing about a Wednesday noon to start is that we had all day to talk about it. So maybe we'll come back then and we'll see. Because then, you know, win or lose, we'll have something to talk about for sure. So we'll try and make that happen. But thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of the games. And we'll talk to you whenever we talk to you. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.